Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast in La Belle Provence. This week, Antoine and I are here with Brian Steele, game designer and podcaster extraordinaire. We're going to be talking with him about what got him into game design and what project he's working on today. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron. Hey, Antoine.
Hi, Paul. How is it going?
Pretty good. And this week, we're also lucky enough to be joined by Brian Steele. Hey, Brian.
Hello.
How are you today, sir?
Fantastic. It's been an awesome weekend.
Well, you had your turducken?
I had the biggest turkey that I've ever personally roasted, and I got engaged.
Congratulations. Okay,
now, which one of those was the highlight of the weekend? Because, I won't judge you.
Because my fiance will no doubt listen to this, it is definitely the engagement.
That is the correct answer, sir. This marriage will last. All right. So, as always, we're going to do a standard format for our show. So we're going to go into the hobby time. And I will talk about my super long list of hobby and games that I played. I was on a cruise. So I was thinking about hobbying in games, but sadly I didn't get to play any. The closest thing, and this I really had to dig deep for this, guys. The closest thing I got for my list of hobby stuff for the last 2 weeks was I cleaned my workspace so I could start painting a commission this week. So I got a bunch of Everblight I'm going to be starting. Hopefully get it done just after Christmas, if I'm lucky, which will be a month before the deadline the client gave me. So he should be happy because it'll be early, and I'll be happy because I won't have to worry about it in January when I'm doing Elizabeth Beckley's masterclass and then getting ready to go to Captain Con and all this other stuff. So I intend to paint like a demon.
Where did your cruise go?
So the cruise was Caribbean. We did Nassau, Bahamas. We did Falmouth, Jamaica, and Cozumel off the coast of Mexico.
Oh, I loved Cozumel.
Yeah, we had a great time there. We did the whole swimming with the dolphins.
Oh, that's cool.
I know all kinds of people would be offended by me doing that, but I don't care. The dolphins didn't seem to mind.
Nah, they love you. Dolphins are the jerks of the sea anyway.
They kind of are. Like, they have a lot of personality. I could totally see that they could, just like to dick people around.
Absolutely. They think they're better than you, and you could tell by the way they look at you with those smug, smug blowholes.
Yeah. You know what was funny? So they give us fish to feed the dolphins, right? And it's it's an outdoor place, and it's got a bunch of holding tanks, whatever, where there's about 10 of us in the tank with the trainer and the dolphin. And we're trying to give the dolphin these little fish. And there's probably, I don't know, about 10 inches of space between us and the dolphin. And these seagulls were diving down out of nowhere at like breakneck speeds and snatching the fish from our hands as we're putting it into the dolphin's mouth. It was the craziest thing ever. Like, these things were faster than light.
So at the same time, you got to feed seagulls and tease dolphins.
Yes, exactly. The looks they give you, man.
See?
I thought only my wife could look at me that way. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. I love cruising. It's a big thing my wife and I like to do. And it was our 5th anniversary kind of gift to ourselves, so.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome time. But sadly, I didn't get to take any little benums on the boat with me to paint. I kind of ran the option by my wife, who looked at me strangely, and the little man stayed home. So, by the same token, unless you count the game of ping pong I played against my wife or mini putt that I played against her on the boat, I didn't really play any games. So I guess we'll skip my lame ass and go right into Antoine. How's your hobby time, Antoine?
The hobby part was not great in the past few weeks. The only thing I did was paint one of the M4 building by MC Studio. The one I did the demo for their Kickstarter.
Right.
But I painted a new one to do a tutorial on how to paint it for his page. So that's done. The text is almost finished, so it should be published next week. by recording time if I'm better at it than this week.
Okay. The yeah, those buildings were super well painted, considering that you know, wait, how can I say this without sounding like a complete jerk? Considering you didn't spend hundreds of hours painting them, they came out really nicely.
That's good.
That was a good, because I had to stop myself, because what I was about to say would make me sound like a total jerk. I was like, oh, wait, no, that sounds like I'm trying to insult Antoine. This is not Yom. See, Brian, we have another host that's on the show occasionally, and I have a bad habit of poking the bear with him.
Gotcha.
So, and he's you know, he's a very established painter, and you know, he won a Crystal Brush Invitational, so he was at Crystal Brush last year, you know. So when I poke fun at his painting, he gets kind of emotional about it. He's sensitive. He's artistic.
He's sensitive.
But we love him.
I wish he was here. I think that would be a fun spectacle.
Yeah.
What's his name?
So his nickname is Yom Lameshen. His real name is Guillaume. I don't know if you followed. I don't know if you're following the Arcadia Quest Kickstarter or anything.
I haven't. Not terribly closely.
Okay, so I was gonna say he and Antoine actually painted a bunch of the miniatures that are in the Kickstarter currently.
Oh, groovy. Okay.
Like the demo ones they're using for the Kickstarter.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so he's a good painter, but it's fun to tease him. Because, you know, he's very susceptible.
Make yourself an easy target, and, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. I like low-hanging fruit. Yeah. I don't like to have to try, you know. Anyway. So enough about the poor guy that's not here. So your tutorial's almost done. Okay. And
that's it for Obi.
I was actually going to say something insightful about the tutorial before I segued into like that nonsense. Yeah, no, it's gone.
It's going to be a picture and a word tutorial. It's not a video.
Okay, no, that's what I was going to ask. Is the tutorial bilingual?
Yeah, it would be written in both languages. The French version is done. I only have to edit the pictures, and now I have to translate it.
Okay.
What kind of building is it?
It's terrain for...
You have
for...
video, so you'll be able to see it. People won't, but if you go on Kickstarter and look for M4 Studio, MC Studio, it's a bit what you would see with the... how do I say that? The Masonite.
Oh, okay.
MDF. It's like MDF terrain.
Okay, it's basically the laser cut wood, but...
Yeah, but that one is cardboard, and it's all collapsible, so you can
you don't need to glue it.
So it can be all flat pack, and it's strong and tough. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, there's a great picture that they have on the first Kickstarter where he stacked a few of the buildings. So the buildings are stackable too, so you can make 1, 2, 3, 5 levels, whatever you want.
Now, only because I'm not familiar with that particular Kickstarter, is it all sci-fi terrain, or do they do?
This run is all sci-fi. It's mostly aimed for Infinity.
Yeah.
Okay. A great game, I might add.
Because the developer and designer is a big Infinity player.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
So he realized that there was a lack of affordable, good terrain out there. So this stuff is like a thick cardstock. And in the Kickstarter, he had this great picture of like three buildings stacked up one on top of the other, and then a pile of like thick, like hardcover books stacked on top of the three buildings.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So the pile is a dozen, if I remember.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And we're talking R.A. Salvatore, like big, giant hardcover books. Yeah.
All right, well, I guess that proves the stalwart nature of their product.
Yeah, no, the terrain is really rock solid. And, you know, I never thought it was going to be, because it gets essentially cardboard.
Yeah.
But it's really robust, and it takes paint really well.
So. Yeah, I painted all the demo stuff, so it's about maybe 10, 12 building, and that one... And I don't have any problem with the terrain. I thought it was going to be more brittle, but it's solid. It's fine.
That's awesome. I don't have an issue with the sci-fi terrain. I've got that coming out of my ears. Right now, I've built one Gotham board for Batman, and I'm looking at building a second. So I'm always in the neighborhood, or always in the lookout for good kind of crumbling urban terrain that isn't obviously sci-fi. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
modern stuff. That's not that easy to get.
No, it especially really isn't. Not
affordable.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been pretty brutal trying to find stuff for Batman.
Yeah, Batman.
Because I looked for a while. You can find all kinds in Pulp City. You can find all kinds of accessories, like if you want trash cans and dumpsters and stuff like that you can find. But finding good buildings, not easy.
Yeah, so you can get all kinds of good.
They cost so much.
Yeah, I was gonna say I dropped a pretty penny on a bunch of stuff from I can't remember what they're called.
Saracen?
No, it's something counterattack, I think. Counterattackbases.com. They do a bunch of other stuff, but they do a handful of buildings that are, without coming out and saying, hey, these are buildings for Gotham, they're Gotham buildings. I mean, like, there's no question. It's like, oh, okay, this is the Asylum building. You know, like, oh, okay.
Okay.
But no,
yeah, Superhero Skirmish is the name of the series.
Looked them up. Yeah, and I bought a couple of those to flesh out my Gotham board, and then I have a whole ton of secret weapon miniatures, scatter terrain like Jersey barriers and traffic cones and stuff. And my board looks good, but it needs friends. I'm tired of playing on the same corner, the same street corner every time. So
yeah. So this is laser cut MDF, right?
Yes.
By the looks of it.
Yeah, and yeah, I just use some regular everyday like wood glue to put it together, and I've dropped one and it didn't break. Like the stuff is solid.
Yeah, well, MDF is the only problem with MDF is it's quite heavy for like shipping. So yes. While the price of the buildings looks to be pretty reasonable, the 4-story apartment building's 25 pounds. Mm-hmm. You know, if you buy 5-6 buildings and ship it, it's going to be costly. Because they're UK-based, right?
So. Yes, yeah. The only thing I wish that I could do with the buildings, and I don't know if they've come out with the ones that have the multi... Like, I wish there was a way for me to do floors on the inside. Right now, they're all hollow, right? Because they're designed for Batman, and Batman doesn't have any indoor rules.
Right.
So, they're obviously designed for a game where you're on the outsides of the buildings, on the fire escapes, you know, that kind of thing.
You know what would work? What you could use is the dust buildings. So, I don't know if you ever heard of a game called Dust Tactics.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, they have a plastic building kit that's modular. So, you can basically, it's a bunch of walls, kind of like what they have for 40K. Mm-hmm. And you just build the building you want. But it's stackable by layer. So, you could do floors and you could build stuff in between if you wanted to.
Well, I mean,
by default they're hollow, but I mean you could totally put in like a thick cardstock floor.
Okay.
And it would be fine.
As it is right now, it's not necessary because you can't really unless you chose
if you want to use it for other games, right?
Yeah. All right, enough about that.
Yeah, I actually sent you the link to MC Studios Kickstarter, so you can actually take a look at what we're talking about.
Okay.
Because if you scroll down about a third of the way down the page in the campaign, you can see the picture of the books on top of the two buildings. It's quite impressive.
Awesome.
Where were we?
Oh, talking about games you played.
Oh yeah, games. On the game side, I got a couple of games of Super Dungeon Explorer with the new box, Forgotten King. Was a lot of fun. I liked the change and the tweak they did to the new edition. Made running as a console even easier. And easier to kill all the heroes. So the first one's fair and square. It's quick. And the second one dragged on. But I don't want to kill the players too fast so they don't have fun. So I always spread the damage. And even then, it came to the last hero on only one wound when he killed the Forgotten King. So, and that was with giving them chances. So... my players need to toughen up and learn to play that game.
No, you just need to be less good. No, that's the problem.
I was also crazy lucky on my dice rolls.
As the consul, Antoine, you kind of have a reputation. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
We have nightmares about it, Antoine.
Well, the new edition is good for that because now, instead, in the first edition, the only way to bring players back was to get the resurrection scrolls. There were two that were random loot. So you might pick them or not at all. So it was pretty bad. So player elimination could happen quick and suck. But now, each time you kill one of the spawning point or the minibus, I'm unsure on which one exactly, but they happen almost at the same time anyway, you get a princess coin, and the princess coin let you bring back a dead player, and you get one for each spawning point or minibus. So you can bring in a standard game, in a standard 3 heroes game, you can bring three heroes back, so which is pretty good for the heroes. You can kill them and they won't suffer too long and have to wait before coming back.
Because it was so terrifying playing against Antoine that I think I passed it on to my daughter genetically. If I show her a picture of you and Super Dungeon Explorer at the same time, tears. Tears, Antoine.
You make children cry.
Yeah, for sure.
She's like, inherited the fear, Antoine. It's not good.
Now, do you always console when you play, or?
Yeah, I would like to play as a player, but we have the arcade rules for that now, so I'll probably try it solo to at least try the arcade rules, or try it arcade with other people and all play as heroes, because as when we play versus with the classic games, I'm always a console.
Gotcha.
He's also the only one that knows the rules really well. Antoine is our local rule. I won't say rules lawyer because it has a negative connotation, but he's like the rules expert.
Rules aficionado.
Antoine, yes, well, Antoine loves rule books. So.
Awesome.
And he's got the memory for it.
That's not hobby, but what I did before we came to the recording is finally setting up my bookshelves in my gaming room, which after two move, I didn't come out of the all my books. I didn't come out of their box in 5 years, I think. But now, finally, they're all setting up, and there's rows and rows of RPGs and miniatures book. Which made me bring out the... Found I spoke with that about that with Paul earlier, but I found out my Manowar book, the old board game by Game Workshop.
Oh wow! Yeah,
yeah. So I've been reading that today in my commute to probably try out a game after 15 years, maybe. Yeah,
it's gonna rope me into playing Manowar.
Yeah, I only have the small plastic galleys that came with it, but we both have a Uncharted Seas model. Which are perfect proxy for that.
I was going to say, that would work perfectly.
Yeah. So, you listeners, you'll hear about Manowar pretty soon, I hope. Yeah, so, other game, I did an intro game with a new player locally, Marco. We played Pigs versus Everblight in the Ord side for War Machine Ords. Pretty cool. The player already owned some models, but he got quickly into the rules, and it was a pretty good game. And lastly, I had a Guild Ball game with Yom, my Butchers against Brewers, and came really, really close, ended 10-14 for him. So I love that game. Need to play it more.
I thought the game played to 12 points.
Yeah, but when you score a goal, it's 4 points. So it was 10-10, and he scored a goal.
Oh, I thought goals were 2 points.
Yeah, no, kills, well, takeouts are 2 points, and goals are 4.
Okay. Is it different in the demo?
No, it's the same thing, but you play to 6 points instead of 12.
Right.
Yeah, no, I love that game. I just wish I could. We had more player locally so that I could play against something else than Brewers all the time.
Yeah, no, I came home that night because I went and watched part of that game. And I came home that night and I started trying to look up teams. It's not easy. Yeah. That's really the only problem I have with that game is that it's not easy to see what the models look like. There's a bunch of 3D renders on the website. You sift through their Facebook, you'll see a model here, a model there. it's hard to find good pictures.
There are some group pictures of the painted teams for the studio models. So they're not easy to find, but there are some existing. So.
I even tried going to the retailers pages. I went to was it Discount Games in the States and started looking through their stuff to try to find it. No, there's
no picture. It's all the renders. I'll find you the links toward the painted stuff. You'll have it easier to look at them.
Yeah, because you know, especially that game where it's, I don't know if you've seen the models for the game, Brian.
I've seen a handful of them. A couple of my friends are pretty big into it. I have not gotten into it at all.
It's worth trying.
I've heard really good things, and it's not like I haven't gotten into it because I didn't want to. It's just it hasn't crossed my desk, and I'm sure I will. You know, when convention season kicks back up again, because the people who I know that love to play it, I will be seeing at multiple conventions over the course of next year. So it's I'm willing to bet that before the end of 2016, I'll probably have a Guild Ball team at some point, but I can't say for sure right now.
Right. So I've been kind of shopping for the models, and like I said, it's hard to find good pictures. And the reason I really want to find good pictures is because the teams are not cheap.
Okay.
They are, especially considering, so you're in the States, so it wouldn't be so bad for you, but considering the exchange rate, like 35%, you know, it makes a full team of six models, like the team bundles, I think, work out almost like $180 or $170.
Oh my God.
With the tokens and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, but you don't need the tokens.
If you just buy the individual models, are about
120 max Canadian.
Well, the individual models are about $20 US. Like $19.99 for most of them, from what I've seen. Between $16.99 and $19.99. $16 to $19.
Are they like really well put together as far as like detail and such, or
yeah. They're nice models. Big scale. They're 32-35 millimeter or something like that. So yeah. They're sizable, and they have a good cast, good quality. Now,
what company makes that, or is that like their
Steamforge game? They launched the company with the game.
Okay.
And so you need six models to plant one, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, a captain, a mascot, which is really a mascot, so a little animal that's on the field, and four other players.
Right. Okay. And there's one big kind of burly player usually, and then you know a bunch of different normal-sized guys.
Yeah, most teams have seven players available now, and you need six to play, so you have some choice.
So if you figure $20 average a model, or 22 Canadian or whatever... You need six. It still works out to be pretty expensive for six models.
Yeah. For the total cost is not.
Yeah.
But that's the only cost you have.
Is it Steamforge?
Yeah, Steamforge games. Or search for guildball.com.
Yeah.
As easy as that.
I mean, it is nice. They do make the rules available for free along with all the templates. And they make like paper standees you can put on bases and
use as proxies for the models. Teams, so.
Yeah. So that's cool of them.
I'll be looking them up.
Yeah, and they have some of the best quick start rules I've seen for miniatures games.
Okay.
They even adjust the adjusted play size. So instead of being a full 3x3, you use a 2x2, and they adjusted some of the cards with lesser or shorter range on their movement and their kick stats to be able to play on that short size, and it gives a really good idea of the full game playing it. It's really good.
Okay. We are sidetracking all over the place.
Yes.
Sorry.
So,
It's what I'm good at.
No, it's what we're good at too.
Yeah. What else did you get done?
And that's it for painting, for gaming. The last thing I did was I gave my second class for the painting workshop at the Slab Rosemont, which is a local recreative center here.
The community center.
Center. Okay.
Yeah.
And this one was intermediate to advanced, so it was more a couple of random techniques about to push your miniatures painting skills, like five or six type of blending, some weathering, some like effects like blood, snow, stuff like that. So it went pretty well. I had five repeat from the first class, which is pretty good. Seven attendees. And it was pretty fun. The overall, the center, the community center is happy with it. So we're going to do two more in the winter months and see how it goes after that, if we extend or add new classes, stuff like that.
Nice.
So that's it for me.
Oh, so Brian, you're up.
Well, I mean, hobby-wise, I spent a lot of time in the studio this week, besides, like, regular commission-type stuff. But I actually did some stuff for myself. I've got a big tournament, a big Batman Managers game tournament coming up on Sunday, and I needed to finish a couple of gents that haven't seen the field yet. And primarily, I spent most of my time working on Deathstroke, the comic book version of Deathstroke rather than the Arkham Origins, because I prefer the sword to the bow staff. And then I just, you know, in the interim started building, started working on a couple of new commission sculpts for a client who has a character in a comic book that he wanted sculpted, which we got permission from the IP holder to do. So that's awesome. So potentially in the future, there might be some recreation or reproduction rights. I might be able to sell some resin casts of them. That'll be cool.
Nice.
And then I just today got started on my entry for the Chibi Swap.
It's so, the infamous Chibi Swap that I keep missing somehow.
The infamous Chibi Swap. Yeah, this is my first one. I didn't get in the first two. And one of my fellow painter friends was talking about how this awesome thing she got out of the Chibi Swap. And I was like, Liz, what's up with the Chibi Swap? And she's like, you're not in it? I'm like, no, I don't even know what you're talking about. Other than the obvious that you guys are swapping chibis. What is this? And she's like, yeah, you buy a chibi, you paint it, and it goes to some random person, kind of like a Secret Santa kind of thing. And I said, I want in on this. And so now I am.
This is Liz Beckley?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So someone's getting her model. That's someone's making out like a bandit then.
She's not the only great painter. There was a couple of really good painter in the group in the first one. So, and everything that was sent was cool, but yeah, the level are all over the places, but there's also effort. Like in the first one, I not only got one miniature, I got two chibis and a custom cast by the guy and a base plate to put all of that on.
Oh my God.
Two painted models. So it went all out. It was really
cool. I feel bad. I'm just doing a dude with a resin base that I did.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing too. I put all of it in the painting and send it that way.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it depends how much time you have too, right?
Yeah.
If you've got the time, you know, and you're enjoying doing it, then why not go overkill, right? But yeah. If
that's true.
Sadly, time is, you know, and Brian, you're like us. You're an older gamer. Sorry.
It's okay.
So, you know, you've got real life responsibilities, so it's tough sometimes. You don't have the 10, 15 hours to put into a project for something like that, right?
And honestly, right now, it's I spend a lot of my time, if I'm sitting at the studio desk, it's because I'm working on something that's going to pay me. You know, it's actually going to be a paid commission or, you know, something that...
Yeah, of course.
I have a hard time for the exact same reason that I can't play video games on my PC, although I can go in the living room and play on the Xbox and have no trouble whatsoever. If I'm playing video games on my PC, I sit there and I feel guilty that I'm not writing or game designing. So I can't do it. I can't like the 10 feet from studio to living room. That is all I need to stop feeling guilty about not working. And the studio is the same way. If I'm sitting here working on stuff that's, you know, the stuff that's for me or in this case for the chibi swap is it's in between layers and shades on something for someone else that's actually paying. So
yeah, and depends on your painting speed too.
Yeah,
I paint slow but to a high level, so it takes long. Even if I only did a single mini, I think mine took 5 or 6 hours to do.
For me, it depends a lot on, frankly, what level the client
is. Oh, yeah,
asking
for sure.
For. Yeah.
When we talked, but that was a single project for a swap, so I sent on the Amini. I wanted it to look good.
Oh, you're already done with your number three?
No, it wasn't the first one. For the this third swap too. I just received my person pick.
Oh, okay. And
what I had in mind doesn't fit with her criteria. So
gotcha.
I need to toy with that and dig in my chibi pile.
You have a chibi pile, and that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I have chibi piles.
I've got a little chibi guy that I want to get set up to do for Crystal Brush next year, but I don't know if I'm going to have time. I've got him started, but I don't know if I'm going to have the time to give him the love that I want. So yeah. it might end up being double the love in 2017.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works, huh?
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, that's pretty much my hobby stuff. And games, I'm constantly playing games. You know, most of the time it's either playtesting stuff that I'm doing or right now. I mean, last week was weird because it was Thanksgiving. So other than playing some board games and card games with the family or with my friends that came over after Thanksgiving, there wasn't a whole lot going on. Just kind of getting geared up for the tournament on Sunday, and you know, this Friday I've got my my big one of my playtest groups for my D&D world, and so yeah, it's a constant thing of little games more often than not, especially last week because I couldn't had this pesky holiday get in the middle of things.
Yeah, these family events, eh? What the hell?
I know. It's like, oh, you gotta cook food and hang out and enjoy people's company. Instead, I could be rolling dice and killing goblins, but no.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
I just don't agree with your killing goblins. Goblins should be killing stuff.
Goblin lover.
He's pro goblin.
He's pro goblin. He's the Green Party, but just a different type of Green Party.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up the... What do we call this section? Yeah, hobby time. Oh, so sad. 2 years in, I don't know what the section's called. Okay. Moving right along. This is going to be one of those episodes. We'll go into Mike's question of the week. And it appears to be a two-part question, though the parts are very similar. Have you ever successfully turned a non-mini wargamer into a mini wargaming addict? Did you ever try to convert your significant other as a way to let them, to help them understand your obsession with miniatures? Sorry, Antoine, I know I changed the question a little bit, but I didn't understand
that's fine.
What the abbreviation meant.
Tabletop wargaming.
Oh, is that what that is? Well, that's
what
thing.
I think it is.
No, that totally makes sense. Oh, I thought that was you abbreviated. That was what Mike sent us?
No, that's a copy-paste.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry, Mike. So, have we ever successfully converted a non-mini wargamer to a mini wargamer, and have I ever tried to convert my significant other? Oof. I don't think I've ever successfully converted a non-mini wargamer into an addict. I mean, I've had non-mini wargamers play mini wargames with me, and they find them interesting, but no one's like, you know, ever go, oh my god, I've got to start buying miniatures and learn how to paint. Yeah, that's never happened. And did I ever try to convert my significant other? Yeah, so before my wife, in the dark times, I tried to get my girlfriend to play 40K with me. So I bought her a Necron army because, you know, Space Undead were cool. And we did have some fun painting, but we never actually got around to playing a game because I think that was never in the cards. I think she liked the hobby aspect. But totally had no interest in playing the game. And my wife, I almost said my current wife. That's the only, my only wife. That would have been the wrong answer. Yeah. My wife has zero interest in trying anything miniature related. Like, if I could go into negative interest, it would be negative interest. She likes my little dudes, as she calls them. She finds them interesting to look at, especially if they have shiny bits. But there is zero interest in trying to play a game or doing anything about it. She does like the fluff from 40K. She finds it so twisted and weird. It was kind of funny because when we first met, she was telling me about this game she was playing because she plays RPGs. Like with, she basically freeform RPGs over chat.
Oh, okay.
And she was talking about the story she was playing, and her character was in this super grim, dark, like, space setting. And I'm like, oh, really? And then I start talking about 40K, and she's like, hey, I've heard this before. Like, yeah. I hate to say, but your GM is ripping someone else off. So, yeah. I have never successfully converted anyone to miniatures. So, I think I'm the problem. Antoine, what about you?
Oof. I don't know if I converted a non-mini Wargamer to a Wargamer. I got Wargaming people that were already interested, more interested into it, but converted someone from, let's say, another type of gaming to miniature gaming, I don't think so. I don't think I tried.
So basically, you converted someone from cocaine to crack.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. That's fine. That's exactly it.
Nice. You're a bad, bad man.
For my significant other, she's into art stuff, and she did paint some miniatures, but she's not interested into it. She do some like family board games or some group games, but she is also super competitive in anything, but she's not good at games usually. So
you know, I'm recording this. You know that, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that's all known in public knowledge. So I should survive. And she doesn't listen anyway, so that I'm fine.
I'm just trying to imagine how frustrating it is to be your super competitive wife trying to play games against you.
Yeah.
The master of all rules.
Yeah, so we had fights about group games. And that's why we don't play like versus game, one versus one. We don't play that. We don't play any of those. We always play group.
Cooperative games, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that, because one versus one, I've slept on the couch before. So, nope. She understands. She doesn't care for any of that. That's fine, as long as I keep it to the basement. But...
Nice.
That's it. No. You, Ryan?
Yeah.
As far as like successfully turn other gamers into a mini game addict, I don't know about an addict. That seems like pretty strong. But I've probably brought over a few people to, you know, try out some new things, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you know, now you're into role playing. Let's try and do this little extra thing that we've got going on. And games like Descent and the Castle Ravenloft, you know, the ones that are like basically kind of role-playing, sort of, but on a board game thing, that's a really good way to bridge the gap.
The gateway games.
Yeah, they totally are. Shadows of Brimstone is perfect for that, because there's a lot of role-playing elements in that game. I love that game so much.
I can imagine Imperial Assault would be good for that, too.
Absolutely, if you've got a sci-fi fan, specifically a Star Wars fan. Yeah, I think that's probably, I couldn't like put my finger on someone specifically that's like, yes, this person was originally like, he played Uno and then I turned him into a 40K freak, but you know, it's like,
the fact you pulled out Uno as your example shows your age, Ryan, just throw
that it's out. Cause I have kids. Come on.
They still make Uno.
They make, lots
is yours
of
printed on the original vellum or like,
mine's actually just Un. It's the original Viking version. You use stones and sheep's blood. As far as the significant other factor, I actually hooked my ex-wife pretty hard on 40K and fantasy. We played a lot of that.
You're my hero.
Is my... the ex-part wait. Because she beat you at the game?
I was going to suggest that we're fighting over rules because it's GW games, right? You know how the rules are written. So,
and then my fiance, she's not. she is willing to try stuff, and she's getting interested in, like she watches when we play Batman and asks questions, and, you know, I have introduced her to the wider world of gaming. She actually plays D&D with us, and, you know, she was big into, like, card games and stuff before, and so now, obviously, she's, you know, on my personal playtest team for any of the games that I'm designing, but, like, when it comes to actual just gameplay, she's getting interested. I don't know whether or not she'll ever, you know, similar to Antoine's significant other, she's an artist first and foremost, so she likes to paint. She loves to, you know, paint the models, and, you know, she loves the idea of, you know, turning these little kind of dull gray dudes into actual, you know, little moving pieces of art. And I think that might attract her far more than the actual gameplay ever would.
Yeah.
Does your significant others ever surprise you with the amount of, like, gaming knowledge they've retained? Because, you know, all gamer guys I know ramble about their games to their significant others like their significant others care. Oh, I did this, and then my guy did that, and then I shot this thing off the table. And, you know, they politely nod and whatever until we get it out of our system. But then once in a while, my wife will pull something out of nowhere and be like, oh, you're playing Guillaume's Orcs. Oh, that one's painted red. He goes faster, right? Because he's red.
Yeah, little sound bites. They that stick.
Strangely, I don't have that, but I have a friend's wife who does, and that came out. So I know what you're talking about, but my wife don't keep any of that. That all goes in the trash can in her mind. Like, she already asked me to talk about miniatures to go back to get to easier to sleep.
Jeez.
Can you tell me about one of your miniature game? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. I have friends for miniatures now.
As long as your miniatures aren't your friends, that's the distinction you need to make.
Yeah.
That's what it starts becoming.
Maybe some
a problem.
Of the Gimbal models are my friend.
All right.
So, hope that
I don't even know where we're going with this anymore.
Mice.
And I'm sure it probably didn't answer your question, but that's all you're getting from us. On that note, why don't we take a quick break? Then we'll come back and talk to Brian about his life and his history and his future in gaming. So, we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right, folks. So now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of the show here. We're going to talk to Brian. He's going to tell us all about his life, you know, from when he was a wee lad, discovered gaming, all the way up to today, where he's now a...
An old lad.
An old lad. Here you go. a veteran.
I was actually going to say a big name in the industry.
Well, that would have been nice. That made me feel good.
That's what I was going to say, and then Antoine had to ruin it.
So Paul is nicer than me, then.
That's all right.
Well, that goes without saying. You're French. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it should be the inverse, no?
I don't know. Is that the way it's supposed to be? I have no idea.
Aren't French Canadian nice and French, the beachy ones?
As an American, I am staying out of this.
I think it depends on who you ask. I'm sure if you ask French Canadians, yes, that's absolutely true. But I think if you ask the Parisians or the French from France, they'll have it the other way around.
Oh, no, they all know that they are bitchy. The Parisian one? Yeah, they know. They
well, even the rest of
about that.
Even the rest of France knows the Parisian ones.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And now that we've alienated at least half our listeners. Let's...
And some of our own gaming group, so.
Yeah. Sorry, Yom. I didn't mean it. All right. So, Brian.
Yes.
You have been in the industry for a long, long time in one way or another. Now, I know you have a contract business, Urza's Den, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's for Urza. Is it Urza Studios now? Is it?
No, it's technically the business. The actual like tax ID is under Urza's Den Writing and Design. But my I've got a set of checks around here somewhere that says Urza's Den Freelance. It just kind of depends on whether or not I'm hiring myself out to someone else or if I'm trying to create something that has my own stamp on it.
Right. Okay.
But it's all me.
So now you're all independent and freelance, but it wasn't always the case, right? I think originally you started out in the industry doing something else.
Way back when, way back in when dinosaurs played games, I started out just kind of helping with playtesting. I did some playtestings for Agents of Gaming, the original Bat 5 Wars. Just kind of off the record kind of thing, you know, helping people out make their games, try and get free stuff. I was on a couple of demo squads, you know, that sort of thing back and forth. I've been a gamer for, you know, almost a little over 30 years. Which by the way, only places me as like 8 or 9 years old before when I started gaming. Before people start thinking 30 years, God, this guy's a dinosaur himself. I got in kind of inducted into D&D by my cousin Toby. We were at his house and he was forced to play with the cousin kid that's hanging out in the basement with him and his friends. And so I was little, and I've slept a lot since then. I remember my dad basically telling him, you know, include your cousin Brian. And so I ended up playing D&D, which as a, you know, as an 8 year old, you get handed a sheet and a couple of dice and they're going to tell you everything. Your name is Goflar the Barbarian. And when we tell you to roll this one, you're going to roll this one. And I loved the idea of playing make believe with rules, because that's basically all it was to me was we're
playing. That's all it is.
It's so much more now. It's so much more. Come on, you're belittling my industry. But yeah, like that was, you know, as an 8 year old, it was the I can have rules for cops and robbers. I can have, you know, when we're playing, you know, cowboys and Native American peoples, because I'm PC now. When we're playing these games, you don't just have, it's not a I shot you, no you didn't. There's rules for that, and it hooked me right then. And you know, I'm sure in some way, shape, or form, you know, there were certain, probably some years where it didn't hit me as hard. But you know, as the time moved on, D&D was always my first gaming love, and role playing was where I kind of got my start. And then at the ripe old age of 15, one of our local comic book shop owners or workers at the time. Took me and a couple of my friends to a convention up in Michigan, and I got to see a gigantic table full of the awful plastic models from the Tyranid Assault or Tyranid Attack board game.
Yeah, those were horrid.
They were awful.
The Tyranid Warriors.
The giant ant butts, yeah.
Exactly.
But I fell in love. I was like, whoa, what is this wonderful thing in front of me? This amazing... Because I had been painting like D&D figures, like Old Ralph Partha lead minis and things like that. I had painted those for years. Mm-hmm. And this was... Wait, there's more than putting these on a hex map? Those are trees. What is this? And I sat in on a... basically just an inflated version of a Tyranid Attack game. And before we left that show, me and my two buddies, we bought, I picked up one of the Realms of Chaos books and, the Rogue Trader, the Rogue Trader book. And then like 6 months later was when the like Warhammer 40K second edition came out. The first big black box with the Blood Angel on the front. And where it became more of a game and less of a role playing experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you guys did much rogue trading, so to speak.
No, I started with second edition.
Yeah,
okay. Same here.
Okay, yeah. Rogue Trader was more role playing game than Minis game.
I think it was the same for the fantasy side, the earlier version. Yes, like that. And I have some of the first edition.
Absolutely.
Some in the first two or three, third edition of fantasy. So, yeah.
And so I barely got my feet wet in Rogue Trader before suddenly the game just took this giant left turn into full-on war game. And me and my buddies, we would do all-nighters in his garage. You know, like we'd start playing. Because back in, I'm sure you guys remember second edition games. They lasted 6 or 7 hours. And and that, we would do that. We would have these all-night, like, epic, you know, epic night game nights. And then we started playing epic. You know, I mean, like, so, like, there was, minis became a big part of my life. And then fast forward until I was about 21 or 22, and I went through a whole chain of awful retail jobs. I made donuts for 2 weeks. I worked at my local super grocery store for the shortest shift that I've ever worked in my entire life. I worked for 4 hours because it was so crushing and awful. I faked stomach cramps at lunch and left. Never went back. Never got paid for those 4 hours. It was just a string of awful jobs that, you know, I was trying to do to make ends meet. And my now ex-wife, but my girlfriend / wife at the time, she looked at me and was like, you got to do something that's forward progression. You know, you're spinning your wheels. You've got to do something. And up until that point, I had basically done a little bit of like magazine writing, you know, just a couple of little, you know, hand me some free minis in exchange for an article. But I had never actually gotten a real paycheck by any means. And we knew that I needed to do something that would allow me to keep writing, because that was definitely where my heart was. And so we went to the local comic book shop that was owned by a family friend of ours. And we said, you know, I want to help you with this. I want to get in on this. You guys are looking for a daytime manager. Let me do that. And I can bring my laptop and I can, you know, push my laptop back then was like 40 pounds and, you know, 30 feet across. But, you know, I was like, I can still write while I'm working. And about that same time was the Alliance Open House in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is only about an hour and 15 minutes away, maybe if traffic's bad. And he was like, "Oh, what's up?"
Sorry, I was going to interrupt. Alliance is a big distributor in the States, right?
Yeah, it's huge. It's one of the top two easily where most game stores get their stuff. And actually, Alliance also now has partnered up with Diamond that does
comic books.
Yeah. Yeah. So this comic book / gaming shop, you know, he gets invited to the open house every year. And he's like, listen, if you're going to do this, if you're going to be part of the retail world, you're going to come with me and you're going to see how this works. And I'm like, okay, this will be awesome. You know, I've gone to Gen Con for several years. I know how the convention circuit goes. You know, Gen Con and Origins was like my, you know, they were my vacations every year. And he was like, this is different. This is just for stores. And this is a trade show. This is just for stores. This is just for game makers and the distributors. And so I was expecting to get there and have it be this, like, you know, stodgy, uptight, you know, classes and things like that. And it wasn't. It was an awesome show, and they put on a good show every year. But it was really neat getting to meet a bunch of people. And during that time, there was a little booth of a company that had put out a couple of role-playing supplements, but they were showing off the extremely rough version of their minis game that they had planned to put out for the following year. It was still 7 or 8 months off, but they had some unpainted, like just white pewter models on their table around like two hills and a tree and index card stats. And it was just really rough looking, but they were showing people how to play. And I sat there at that table and was like, you have got a fan, you know, my game design brain went into overdrive, and I was like, you guys have a fantastic game here. I'm not just saying that because I'm standing in front of you. I'm saying this because this is a really good game. And one of the two men at the booth, we ended up getting some beers afterwards and having a good time, and, you know, talked about some of the stuff that they wanted to do in the future. And before the end of the night, I ended up giving one of those two guys my quote unquote business card, which was basically a Xeroxed like email address that says, email me and I'll tell you the stuff that I've done. Please give me free stuff. And that ended up being Brian Snowdy and Matt Wilson from Privateer Preps. The game that we were playing was the original, basically the precursor of War Machine.
Wow.
And I told them, I was like, this is a great game. I already love your setting because I love the Iron Kingdom stuff. I love what you've got going on. If there's anything I can do for you guys, you let me know. Again, I was just hoping to be like a demo monkey, you know, just to try and help push it in stores, you know, like just anything to get my hands on some of these models. And that's where I left off. You know, leave the show, we go home, yeah, I play some HeroClix, you know, that sort of thing. And I end up getting an email from Matt Wilson where he says, it says on your gamer resume that you've done some writing. It just so happens that we are suddenly in need of a writer, and we'd like you to, you know, throw us a test piece. And so I put together, you know, a couple thousand words, which is about as much as I had ever written before in one chunk ever. You know, put a couple of thousand words down and threw that in, invented a couple of characters to involve with their characters and the stuff that they already had in their storybooks, in the Lock and Load and or not Lock and Load, but the Monsternomicon and right.
No Quarter,
the Wishfire trilogy, which at that point was just two books. The third book had not come out yet. But the you know, so I kind of put together this little thing, and I made a little slapstick gobber, a kind of goofy little gobber gentleman in that story. And in the original version of the story, I had him die. I invented Reinhold with my test piece. And originally, Reinhold takes a bullet in my story, and he perishes. And, you know, Vicky has this, like, moment of, you know, milking the giant cow. No! You know, that sort of thing. And my ex-wife actually goes, oh, my God, you killed the little guy. He was so cool. Why did you kill him? And I'm like, because I wanted drama, you know, grim dark. and she's like, you should have him live at the last minute. That should be like his funny thing. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so I changed the ending of the story that he, like, you know, ducks at the last minute, and that the original Reinhold rules about him having the super lucky save.
Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, I sent that piece in, and Matt loved it, and he was like, you obviously know what you're doing. You've got a grip on things, and he's like, I love the idea of what you've got here. And, do you think you can do 75,000 words by August? And I obviously was not going to say no. I had no idea what 75,000 words look like, you know, like it was, yeah, that concept was so foreign. You know, this guy had just done like a 3,500 word piece for this short story, and that looked like a lot. Sure. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Yeah. If I have to get a co-cabot to stay up all night and work on this, I will. And so I said yes. And that 75,000 word gig ended up being War Machine Prime. The original Mark I War Machine Prime was my first full on, like, professionally published product.
That's good to have on the resume.
It definitely helped. The following year, War Machine Prime won 3 Origins Awards, and that pretty much was what left my initial footprint on the in my personal opinion, kind of got me my definitely my leap to start. And I stayed with Privateer as a kind of steady freelancer, a constant contract, for what I say is about 3 years. I made it through like three of the War Machine books, the first Hordes book, and the beginning of No Quarter. Like, those first handful of issues of No Quarter have a bunch of stuff for me in it. And then shortly during that, those kind of end couple of months, that after a couple of years, I ended up discovering that there was a Babylon 5 role-playing game by a company called Mongoose Publishing. And one of my best friends got me hooked on Babylon 5 so hard that like I saw that there was a B5 role playing game book at one of the shows, and I stopped immediately what I was doing. You know, even I could have had to go to the bathroom. It didn't matter. I stopped right there. I looked at the fine British gentleman who was running the booth, and I said, "I want in on this. I don't know how, but I want in on this." Similarly, I was trying to basically, see if I can, get two gigs on the same path, and it didn't end up working that way. But it did end up getting me starting a dialogue with the owners of Mongoose, and then through a strange sort of turn of events, they did have a contest to try and get a staff writer. They wanted a new staff writer for their role-playing game lines, and they did a contest where you had to write a bunch of stuff, send a manuscript in, and then they whittle it down. And I ended up getting third in the contest, and I got the email that said, sorry that you didn't win, but you made it through the finals, or you made it through the semifinals, and you got down. You were the third place entry. We're very sorry that we don't have a spot for you. Womp womp. And I felt just was there 82 third places? Did every single right. person who didn't win get you got third? And so there's a lot of self doubt and such. But about 2 months later, I get an email from one of my friends who did work at Mongoose, Richard Neely. He was one of their writers and he did some editing for them. And Richard Neely emailed me, and he goes, "Hey, awesome. I heard the awesome news. Did Matt get a hold of you yet?" And I write him back, "Nope, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about." And his response was, "Oh shit, I'm early. Don't tell him I told you." And like hangs up the Facebook conversation, and that's it. And so I'm interested, and I check my email like an hour later, and the owner of Mongoose said that the other two, the first place and second place, couldn't hack the deadline times. So the job was mine if I wanted it, which led me to working for Mongoose for almost 6 years as a staff writer.
That's a long time to work in this industry. People seem to slide around a lot. So 6 years is a long time to stay anywhere.
I don't say that in a bad way. I mean, like it was a lot of fun. I did a lot of really amazing stuff with them. And I don't mean that like a patting myself on the back talent stuff. I mean, like, just I had a lot of really cool opportunities. They sent me to Norway to work on a video game for 3 months. I got to meet the one of my favorite actresses from Babylon 5. I got to hang out with her for a while.
Which one?
Claudia Christian.
Which character?
Ivanova, Susan Ivanova.
Okay, yes. Okay.
And Claudia and I actually still keep in touch a little bit. Like, not terribly, like maybe once every 3 or 4 months we might bounce an email or something. But I got to talk to Jason Carter, who played, oh my God, my brain just completely went blank. He's the ranger that that Ivanova loved.
Marcus?
Thank you. Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot that. My brain just stopped functioning. But yeah, I got to do a phone interview with Jason Carter. His phone number was in my phone for a while, and that was hilarious. I'd be at a party and people are starting to name drop. You're like, "Hang on, let me call an actor." let me just call somebody who's going to tell me to shut up. But yeah, like if it wasn't for Mongoose, I would not have gotten to be part of, the Conan properties.
That's right. They did Conan, the Conan RPG.
I wouldn't have been able to work with Conan. I wouldn't have been able to work with Traveler, with the original, like Mark Miller. There's Mongoose really, I got to work with the Starship Troopers property for a little while before that kind of went crazy. I got to do minis games. I got to do role playing games. I got to work on a video game. I mean, like it was just a very good and enriching part of my career. Almost half of my professional industry time was with them, and I would love to say that I would go back if the money was better, but it was what I got out of that job. In the 1.2 million words that I gave for them, it was easily just the opportunities that it opened up. And at the various conventions that they sent me to, and that I got to work behind the counter and meet all these people, and got to see the editing side of things. And it was a very learning experience in about 10 different ways. So I thank my History of Mongoose all the time for what I can do to this day. Mongoose and I separated ways, and that was when I just started doing painting commissions, because at that point I'd really, you know, painted a lot of stuff for myself, but never really, and you know, doing some modifications and stuff for friends and little things here and there. Yeah, for $20 I'll paint all the eyes on all of your, you know, goblins. You know, nothing massive. Someone I was hanging around with, I painted like one model for somebody, and they paid me like $50 for it. And I was like, that's crazy. You'd actually pay me money for a model. And they're like, you should do more. And so I started buying all of the sale, all the sale models that were at my local shop, all the stuff that had gotten marked off. I'd paint them up and throw them on eBay. And that was kind of how I got by for about 6-8 months. I was just painting stuff.
Wow, that's interesting.
Painting stuff and throwing it on eBay, and picking up clients that way. I actually had a buyer on eBay contact me and say, I just bought your new Tyranid yada yada. I want you to paint the rest of my army that way. How can I contact you to do that? And, you know, got this like several $100 commission, which I laugh at the sheer concept of that being several $100 now. But you know, painting someone's army was through, I got the gig through eBay. And that was how my idea of being a freelance painter started, was just almost out of necessity, because I hadn't picked up another gig in a while. And then at one of the shows, I ran into my good buddy Kevin Clark at the Cool Manier Knot booth.
We actually did an interview with Kevin on the show.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Was it earlier this year, Antoine?
Yeah, Kevin's, we did it at TempoCon.
Right, was at TempoCon this year.
Kevin's good people.
Kevin is awesome people.
He is awesome people, and I love him to death. I hope he's listening right now. I miss you, Kevin. I miss your face. Well,
I don't know if he actually listens to us. I mean, that's asking a lot. But yeah. He'll talk to us when he sees us at conventions, because he knows who we are.
Oh, fair enough. But yeah, no,
he doesn't like us that much.
No, I ran into Kevin at he was working at Cool Manier Knot, and I was like, "Whoa, you work here? What's?" I was like, "When did you leave Privateer?" And he's like, "Ah, not too long ago." And you know, we hooked back up and started talking, and he was like, "You should talk to my bosses about doing some work for us." And so I did. I got a hold of the guys who run the joint and said that I was interested. And what was funny is they originally hired me not as a writer and not as a painter and not as a sculptor, not as a designer, but as marketing. They hired me because one of the two owners liked my – he heard me on a different podcast. He heard me on the Garage Hammer podcast. Shameless plug.
That's okay. You can plug Witek. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he heard me on Witek's podcast talking about you know, some of the – because I was – obviously open about the fact that I'm trying to get on to write for Cool Mini, and there's a bunch of stuff that I want to do, and I've got these great ideas. And he, Churn, one of the two owners, he heard my podcast interview, and he's like, you have a lot of love for gaming. We can tell it. He's like, but honestly, we're more interested in you for your voice. He's like, I love your voice. And that's a little,
it is rather melodious.
Well, thank you. It's a little creepy to have that, you know, like that be your hiring factor when it has absolutely nothing to do with anything you've ever done professionally. You know, I'm like, okay. And he's like, we would like you to do voiceovers for our Kickstarter videos. And I said, okay, I'm not going to say no. It's a paying job.
Exactly. You're paying me for it.
You're paying me for it. And it got my foot in the door, because one of the other things that he said, he's like, you know, and since they're only going to be running occasional Kickstarters, as what they originally thought.
At that time.
Yeah, at that time.
As opposed to one every second week.
Yeah, that's what they were thinking. That's what he had said. He was like, you know, in the in-between, we'll find other stuff for you to do. And that's exactly what happened. Is that I started out just doing voiceovers, doing voiceover commercials and like helping with Crystal Brush.
Yeah, that's when we first met Pat.
Yeah, that was the thing. They wanted me to be on the microphone for Crystal Brush and that sort of spiel. And then in the interim, David Doust, the other owner of Cool Mini, basically kind of put me on the Dark Age project for Dark Age games. And myself and Mike Chenal were the lead development team for that game for almost 2 years.
Well, that's kind of his pet project, isn't it?
Dark Age. Dark Age is David's baby.
Yeah.
At least it was. I assume it still is.
I think it still is from what I overheard at TempleCon this year.
It is definitely, you know, he put blood and sweat into that game. It came out like the week after Privateers released War Machine. It's been out that long. It was in different formats. It was way more, you know, 2-3 model skirmish. Now it's a slightly larger game, and then it went back to a skirmish game, and now it's going back to a slightly larger game. Like it fluctuated a lot over the years. But yeah, Douse, that was his baby. So it was also extremely flattering, you know, that he wanted me on that to do some writing for him and to work on developing the story. And I remember initially, like, one of the first projects that I got to work on was the addition of the big robots, the core, the big robots that run on meat. And basically they had a lot of those designs already done, but they had no story to them. They were like, we have no idea how to fit robots into our world. And that's what you're going to do. And so that was like kind of my initial project, was to find a way to make an AI force that runs on meat and scariness part of this very visceral, low-tech world. And that was what got me into the development spot. I stayed at Cool Mini for a couple of years. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to pause you, Brian. That must be pretty intimidating. Like, yeah, we have no idea how this fits in, so just make it fit in. Thanks.
I would much rather have someone hand me a finished set of rules and then they say make it narratively work than someone handing me a narration and saying make rules fit to this. I love rules design.
Yeah, I can see that.
I adore rules design. But if you've already got the outline of what they're supposed to do, or you've already done comparisons in the narrative, or you've already said, you know, this can cut through anything, it's hard to then put rules to something that say, you know, because your first fluff guy is going to look at that and go, well, it can't cut through anything because it only has an AP value of 4. You know, like he's going to figure it out real quick and it doesn't match up. Or they're going to find some kind of little nitpicky thing, because that's what we gamers do. We love to obsess over the small things.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And so I think that's the key when it comes to design wise is I prefer, honestly, in an ideal situation, you do both at the same time. You kind of, the rules and the fluff sort of graduate together. Kevin will tell me, if he does listen to this, I'm going to get an email that says, shut your mouth, Brian. You don't know what you're talking about. Because Kevin is very much rules, 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 rules. The fluff will always bend. Rules, rules, rules. he's like, the game must work, you know, which he's right. But from my design standpoint, because I'm a much more narrative-minded person, is I want those two things to work together fluidly at the same time. But what is easier for me is, and I don't find it, me personally, I don't find it intimidating when someone hands me, here's the concept art, and here's the stats in the game, now tell us a story. I will tell you 10 stories over and over again before I do it the opposite way, if I can, anyway. What was more intimidating to me was the fact that I knew that this was David's baby. I knew that going into it, that you know, my boss, the guy who was signing the paychecks, that if I screw this up and, you know, make a mess out of his out of his, you know, last decade's worth of work, I've made an enemy for life. and instead, it seemed to work out pretty well. I worked for Cool Mini as various different things, primarily as development on Dark Age. And then a little bit of the marketing. I was the editor-in-chief for the Ravage magazine reboot for the first, like, 15 issues.
That's a new one. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was the EIC for Ravage from, like, issue 2 to issue 14, I think. 14 or 15. And that was again, kind of like what I said with Mongoose, is working with Ravage made... I got to see a whole other aspect of the industry. I got to see how advertising, you know, advertising costs and how to set up layout for the articles and contacting everybody and their brother to try and get content for the magazine, you know, and then explaining to them that a lot of this content doesn't really pay, you know, like we would love to get some of your stuff in the article because you love us and you want exposure. You know, that's extremely hard to do, especially now in today's industry, because anybody worth their salt is going to make you pay. And I don't mean make you pay as in, like, you know, some kind of weird revenge thing. I mean, you know, if you're nobody is going to let someone be taken advantage of anymore. You know, actually recently Will Wheaton did a big, huge thing about, don't do pay for exposure. You know, it's get paid your wage because you're doing a job for someone and they should pay you. And now being on that end of things, even more so, I completely agree because I like getting paid.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. But yeah, no, I stayed at Cool Mini for a couple of years and, then we parted ways, and I left. When I left Cool Mini, I was confident enough in my abilities and my position and the contacts that I had made and the various other companies that I had done some freelance for here and there, you know, kind of trickled in a couple of articles here, a couple of scenarios for these guys, and you know, I had made enough contacts in the industry professionally that I'm like, you know what? I don't need another staff gig. I mean, it'd be nice to have one because steady paychecks are good, but I don't need it. I can be a freelancer, and I have been ever since. I've been freelancing solely now for a little over 3 years, two and a half to 3 years.
Wow.
And it's different. It's hard.
I noticed you're not homeless, so I'm going to say you're successful at it.
Yeah. I'm not trying to game design out of the back of a car. No, it's hard. It's a hard, like, pace to keep up, but it's my pace. And it means that if I can set up enough gigs and set up enough commissions, and you know, I still take painting commissions, you know, through my Facebook page, through, email. I do a lot of private commissions. The sculpts I'm doing right now are for a private client. You know, it's not even a company, not a corporate thing. So, you know, I take a lot of these little gigs in between the big gigs. But the big gigs are always fun. Right. You know, but, yeah, so that's kind of what I'm doing. And then obviously, I mean, I hate to pat myself on the back, and I don't like being, you know, I hate feeling narcissistic. But obviously something is working, cause you know, last Gen Con, I got to play one of the guests of honor. I have my guest of honor badge on my wall cause it's the first time that's happened. You know, I had a college call me out to do a seminar, a couple of years back. So obviously I'm doing something right. I don't know how.
I think they call that successful.
I'm not. I don't deal well with that kind of stuff. You're making me blush.
I didn't say wealthy. I said successful.
Okay. There you go. All right. Let's. As long as you've got some lemon with that. As long as you got some lemon with that sweet. That's all that matters.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Me.
There you go.
I can handle that. But yeah. So that's pretty much my professional life in a nutshell. Aside from individual project info. Now that I've totally, you know, you guys are probably sleeping at the microphones.
No. I guarantee I'm awake. I don't talk in my sleep. So. As a freelancer, you've worked for a couple companies we've talked about before. So the other night when we were just kind of going over what we're going to talk about on the show, we mentioned that you'd done some sculpting for On the Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And that you'd run a Kickstarter for a campaign setting you were developing.
I did. It did not go as well as I wanted it to, but the world has been well received. As far as the people who have taken the time to take a look at stuff. And I recently put up some monster templates. Oh, I should say what it was. The name of my world and my Twitter handle is Seventh Crown. It has been well received. I've gotten some retweets and some quotes and a couple of messages for, you know, private messages and stuff from people that I didn't know before and, you know, kind of friends of the RPG Now community and stuff like that. So it's a slow crawl forward since the Kickstarter didn't make it, but I'm still crawling forward and I'm going to make it happen eventually. I just don't have an end date on it because I keep having to do these other things that make money.
So have you thought about relaunching the Kickstarter at some point in the future?
Definitely. I'm definitely going to relaunch. I don't know exactly when. I'm waiting for the artist to come back with some new art to show people. Between that and now I got to plan a wedding and stuff. There's some things. We bought a house recently. So there's been some stuff that's got, you know, real life stuff that's gotten in the way, you know, designing some board games and things. But it's going to happen. I'm hoping that it will happen in 2016, that I'll be able to get it back off the ground. But some of that also has to do with kind of waiting on some of Wizards of the Coast legal information, make sure that I'm doing everything to the letter of the law. I don't want my world to get smushed because I screwed something up or I did something too hastily. So.
So it's a D&D 5th ed setting?
It is technically setting neutral as far as the actual, like, rule set neutral.
Okay.
But it is quite obvious for the stuff that I have, the stuff that I have released of this, the, like, actual rules design, like spells and monster tables and stuff, that it's quite obviously built with 5th ed in mind. But just before I can actually try and sell it, I have to make sure that I can do so without incurring the wrath of people that are much higher on the food chain than I am.
Right. No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And you just let something slip. You've been developing some board games.
Oh, I did. I did let something slip. I finished up a board game that is currently on the back burner for a different company, that hopefully we'll see release soonish. I was the lead designer for the Shadowrun Hostile Takeover board game that has a future date of release as to be determined for Catalyst Game Labs. But most recently, and you guys are the first people I get to talk publicly about this.
Oh my god.
It seemed like little flashing lights should be going off on people's computers and stuff. I got hired on with the Torg Eternity design team to do their first board game. The board game for the Torg Eternity setting. I just recently wrapped up on that, and hopefully that will be out later in 2016, because that would be awesome.
Now, because we're old, we know what Torg is. But anyone under the age of 25 probably has no idea. So,
but they soon will, because it's coming back, and it's coming back big.
It's they are investing a lot of like effort into getting this system up and running again, and you know, relaunching it. And it's a unique setting. It had some very different ideas, and the rule set was interesting as an RPG because there's the card mechanic.
Absolutely, and they're keeping a lot of that same, obviously the same feel. Basically, they are the Torg Eternity release, when it eventually happens, is a progression. Not so much of a, it's not like a reboot of the storyline, but it's an
evolution.
Yeah, it's an evolution of the game world and the game engine. Because if you go back and look at the old Torg books, they're great. You know, they're great reads. There's a lot of information in them, but they're dated. You know, you look at them and you go, okay, these are
it's the times, right?
Yeah, exactly. You
know, these were published in the early 90s and late 80s, I think, the original Torg stuff.
Absolutely, they're old stuff, and like me. And the Torg stuff with the, you know, give it a new coat of paint, you know, a little bit of tweak here and there, you know, bring a lot of the verbiage, you know, the rules, the way it's described, how they kind of work within each other, as far as the individual rule sets and stuff. It's getting a definite shot in the arm from a Fountain of Youth. I've been very fortunate in getting a chance to see a lot of the new stuff as it's being kind of put together and whatnot. I need that information to put together a board game that makes sense in that world.
That would help, right?
Yeah.
You're going to make a board game for this. We're not going to tell you anything about the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Just make it happen.
But having seen the old books, and having seen so far what's up with the new stuff, it really does. It's got a much younger feel, a lot of amazing art. There's a few art pieces that I got to see that I kind of was like, that goes well with, like, you know, Pathfinder level art that we see now. You know, companies that, you know, this game's been around for a long time, and a lot of that old school art that you've seen is just old pencil sketch almost style, the old TSR style stuff. And, you know, I got to see some full color pictures, some, you know, full portrait landscapes Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Full color landscapes.
I wasn't
going to
say anything.
It's obviously going to be a big deal. And when I was given the opportunity to design a board game for them, I kind of had free rein as to what kind of board game I was able to do. And I thought the thing that made the most sense, and possibly actually heralds back to what we were talking about with Mike's question earlier, is one of the best ways to get someone out of role playing and introduce someone out of board gaming and into role playing are those Descent style Descent, Shadows of Brimstone, that kind of role playing game simulation board game.
Right, and they've seen a huge growth in popularity.
Absolutely,
with Descent. I mean, PP just released one, right?
I think so.
Undercity.
Yeah. So, like, there's obviously a calling for them, and for the purposes of any, you know, any kind of miniatures board game, even the miniatures attract certain crowds. You know, so you look at something for the purpose, if the minis are good, you might get people that buy things like, oh, I don't know, we'll say the, you know, Betrayal at Kalth. Is people are buying that box, not necessarily to play that game, but it's,
what are you talking about?
It's
why else would you buy that box? It's all about the board game, Brian.
Well, that's what I'd like to say, but no, I mean, like, if you do good minis, especially if it's minis that have never been done before, you know, or not to that kind of quality, you know, I've done many a search to try and find models for the original Torg critters, you know, the Gossbogs, and the closest thing I found were some Ralpartha plant zombies that I was like, okay, those would kind of work for playtesting purposes. I could maybe use them. But there's not been any real quality minis, especially not to the level that people can create miniatures now. And yeah. So my goal was to create a board game that we could start things off with, creating this kind of role-playing merge with a board game. And so that's how the Torg's Storm Knights versus the Nile Empire began. That's how it has come to be. And then hopefully, if the game does well, that there will be a future for new realms and stuff that you'll be able to use the characters from the first box and, you know, bleed them over into new boxes and stuff. And because one of the things that Torg offered as a setting was the ability for the players to kind of bounce around different realities.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the whole theme of the game.
Yeah.
Was that you were trying to protect, you know, main Earth from all these invading realms.
And so my board game concept, I guess not even a concept, the board game design, it is set in one of these realms initially. And you play through a bunch of scenarios, and you can play standalone games if you really just kind of want to sit down and play a game. But the idea is to play a campaign style growing scenario, so your characters get experience and gear and kind of like a role-playing character would, but in a board game fashion. And then when you are done with this box, as long as this game does well for us, there will be more cosms, is what the realities are called. There will be more cosm boxes out there for you to have your characters to go to. But then no individual box will necessarily be... I didn't want to do, here's the main box, and then expansion, 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 expansion. Because that means that if you didn't ever have the chance to get the main box because either it sells out, or, you know, the price point was too high, or whatever, you're never going to want to buy any of these other boxes. So,
right.
So my goal, as far as the collective design of the way the game works, is rather than having one initial huge purchase and lots of little tiny purchases after, is the main box is an average purchase, and then the next release isn't so much an expansion as it is another standalone game that can also work, that also has facets of it that can work in the first one, and the first one has facets that can work in the second and the third and so forth and so on.
Well, and I think that's the style that seems to work. I mean, we've seen that with Arcadia Quest and
they do extension. The one I think about, the closer one, is Wizard of the Coast with the Shards of Ashardalan and Ravenloft.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. And then one of the things that I primarily did with the game, because it's one of my frustrations. I love Shadows of Brimstone. I adore that game. But one of the things that always bugs me, that and also with Descent, is if you have a character who gets bumped on the head early and knocked out, you have a player basically sitting there, especially if it's a big epic fight, you have a player sitting there twiddling his thumbs for 30, 45 minutes, you know, depending on how long it's going to take. And that is zero fun. That's no fun for the other player, and I wanted to eliminate that. So my game actually is a 100% team game. The players play against the board. There is no, as we were talking off camera earlier, there's no console to fight. Like in Super Dungeon, you're not actually playing against a player. You're playing against the board itself, and the critters of the board have their own rules of what they do every turn, but are still random enough that you can't just math it out and say, if I stand right here, these three guys will never hit me, you know, that sort of thing. There's enough there's enough randomness to it that you can't just figure out your equation and be done. But the way it works is that no player gets knocked out. Individual characters don't just like get bonked on the head and take a bad roll. You are actually battling for the success or failure of the chasm around you. And so if you succeed and you're doing well, then the team is doing well. If suddenly you have a whole bunch of badness happen and one guy starts losing because the other people that are playing are like, Rich is fine. He's got it. You know, Antoine's got that room. Don't worry about it. then you'll know, they'll be able to look at the cards in front of them and they'll go, okay, wait, guys, we're getting really close to losing. You know, we're someone needs to go help Antoine. It's a team effort, because again, when in the Torg like world, the big people that are, you know, they're trying to save reality, you don't get a lot of, this is the sinister mustache twirler in the back, he's going to backstab us all. Because if he does, your reality fails. And that's bad.
Yeah. It's as bad as it can get, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
you can't control the world if the world is gone.
Precisely. And so the whole point of my game, I shouldn't say the whole point, there's obviously the point is to have fun. But the win or lose scenario sort of thing is if you fail, you fail as a team, and if you succeed, you succeed as a team. There will be no downtime for players. Unless, of course, everybody loses and then there's downtime resetting the board. But but yeah, that was one of the things that always bugged me about some of the other ones, was if I decided I was going to play the weak little mage dude and some guy drew an ambush card and the five goblins jumped out of the closet and stabbed me in my face, then I might as well go get a sandwich, because the rest of this fight is going to take them an hour, and I've got nothing to do. Yeah, so that was my primary. No, my primary goal was to make sure a game fit the Torg idea. My secondary goal was to make a game that was team based and utterly cooperative, completely, totally cooperative.
Well, that sounds really cool. Do we have? I know you can't give specific information. Do you have an idea of when this game is going to launch in the market? 2016.
I would hope. I can't really say for sure because it's no longer in my hands. But I know that the Torg team is really looking for the Torg Eternity to hit strong in 2016. So I'm going to assume that they're going to put a lot of effort into making it a reality. I also know that making it a reality. Get it? I made a joke. But I do think that I know that my game has a lot of art involved, a lot of moving parts and miniature designs and things.
Yeah, that all takes time.
That takes time. So if it is going to even be 2016, I would probably be looking towards late 2016. If they get the ball rolling and get it and make it happen, I personally would love to see a Gen Con release. Or at least like have a copy of Gen Con to like start showing off to people.
Or a preview, even if it's rough and first draft, at least.
Yeah,
preview.
that would be pretty slick, but I don't know. I know that everybody involved with the process is very happy with what I've done so far. My involvement with the Torg team was extremely limited before I signed on to this project, and also with the Torg property. It was a lot of reading, but I had not been a massive fan. I had not. It wasn't like I didn't like it. I just didn't really know that much. I did a lot of reading up until then, and there was a gentleman by the name of Dean that they hooked me up with to be kind of my fact checker, my canon checker. So if I did anything for this game that didn't fit or needed to be adjusted, which there was a few adjustments that had to be made along the way, but he was my go-to guy for all my Torg canon stuff. And my personal claim to fame in this instance is in one of the scenarios in the board game, I had set up a narrative instance that I thought just kind of made sense, you know. I was like, and it didn't say anything in the Nile Empire book that this hadn't happened, so we'll see if I can do this. And Dean ended up liking it enough that he adjusted his like Nile Empire role playing game manuscript to reflect it.
Oh, that's cool. Oh,
that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So I it's cool to be part of the team, and it is definitely cool to feel that they, you know, this guy who is lived and breathed Torg for 30 years, enjoyed my stuff enough to adapt it for his contribution to the game that's going to come out at some point. So it was very cool, and I'm looking forward to if anything, I'm looking forward to see just some of these models, what they're to get back to miniatures. I'm looking forward to see some of the models because honestly, they'll be the first Torg minis, and there's something to be said for that. These will be the first Storm Knights that Torg have ever really produced, and some of the creepy little Gosspog mummy things, we're going to see those for the first time in a 3D, design. And I'm super psyched to know that my product is launching those and making that happen. And then I'm really, really hoping that the game goes super well and that people, not just the Torg fans, love it. I want people that are into Shadows of Brimstone and people who like, hey, that looks kind of like Descent. Awesome. Have you ever played Descent and not been bored? That's what this game is for. And that's what I want. I want people to pick it up and not just look and not pass it over because they're like, what's Torg? I want them to pick it up and decide, this is a fun game. This was a lot of fun. My friends and I, we enjoy it. We're looking forward to the next world that you open up. And hopefully that will happen. And I'll be able to do... I'm really, really hoping... The first game is set in the Nile Empire, which is a very steampunk mummy... Like the first Mummy movie.
I was going to say, kind of like the first Mummy?
Yeah, kind of the very Indiana Jones first Mummy, except also with, like... there's one of the characters has power armor, but that's a different story.
slide that in there.
Just slide that in. One of the Storm Knights is a Rocket Ranger, and they basically have power armor. But that's the world that I chose to start off because I thought that was a really solid chasm to do good versus evil and have that kind of cool, shambling horde undead thing coming at you. But I'm really hoping that the next world I can do, my favorite of the Chasms is the Living Lands, which is like Jurassic Park gone wrong.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really want to do a place that has, savage tribal warriors and lizard men and a T-Rex. I want to have a T-Rex model or velociraptors that run down hallways. That's what I want. But the first game has to do really well before I can do another.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that's handy nowadays is there's so many good venues to market these games now. Like if you tried to launch a Torg game 10 years ago, how would you have marketed it? Gaming podcasts, there was no D6G 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There was no Board Game Geek, or if there was, no one knew what it was.
Yeah. No Kickstarter.
No Kickstarters, nope.
Yeah.
Like you've got so many ways to market now to your customers.
No Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. And that just wasn't possible 10 years ago. So the time is ripe for a lot of these older IPs to come back and get reinvented.
Absolutely. And, I had never, I will admit, I did not know how deep and rabid the Torg fan base is. It is. There's a lot of people out there that are still super into it. And
yeah, it's almost as bad as the White Wolf people.
Yeah. Like they're just, it's a deep, deep love that they have for this thing. And I'm hoping that the social media network will reflect on that when those guys turn around and tell their 30 followers and those guys, and then it goes from there. That's my hopes, is that more people fall in love with the world through the people who already love it, if that makes any sense at all.
I totally get what you're saying.
Okay.
That the established fan base basically influence a new generation of fans.
Yeah. That the new generation can see the love that the old generation has.
Yeah.
And hopefully understand it.
So,
wow, one question about like life. Oh. So I was going to say, that sounds like a life lesson there somewhere.
It's time to get deep with Brian Steele. Deep cuts.
Sorry, Antoine, what were you saying?
Yeah, I was asking, so how much are you involved with the miniature design part of the game?
I had to do a art blocking. Basically, I got to tell them how big I wanted them, how tall, you know, what kind of scale, if they're going to have molded bases on them, like if they're going to be like factory ABS plastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because again, I don't know what they're going to put together, what they can budget. But I put together an art blocking for everything, like what kind of pose I wanted them in. My sketch art is not great, so I didn't go that far. But I'm pretty good at describing things. So my
being a writer, I would assume so.
So my art block for them is pretty big, as far as like what I want the individual minis, you know, how tall, how wide. If I want, you know, hopefully three different sculpts, because there's going to be 15 of these in the box, or, you know, just one sculpt because there's going to be two, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, all of that, is higher than my pay grade. And for all I know, they may very well just they might outsource to a mini guy, like a mini designer, and just say, these are what they're supposed to look like. Do it. I have no clue.
All right. Cool. That answers it, at least.
I was going to say, wait, Brian, stop talking. Did we finally hit the limit of what Brian has to say? No, I'm just kidding. I loved it. I think it makes super great content for the show. It's always interesting to hear these people, you know, you or when Kevin Clark was on, or you know, anyone who's been involved in the industry, and just kind of see where it's taken them. And to hear their story, and I find this stuff super interesting.
Well, I love what I do. If I didn't, I wouldn't do it.
Well, I think you're winning at life then, because there's not a lot of people that can say that. And really, that's all you got. There's not really much point in life if you don't love what you do, and you don't get what you want in life. It's kind of wasting it.
Well, you know, it's like, and I make fun, I poke fun at myself, because, you know, I have bad days from time to time. And the other day I was talking to a friend of mine where I was having a rough day, and I was, you know, complaining about going into the studio, and he mentioned something about having to work in, you know, this was back in the summer. So it's like, you know, had to work in like 95 degree heat under an arc welder on a factory line for 9.5 hours. And I'm like, I'm about to complain to you that my primer got fuzzy. That was what threw me off today. And you win. You know, my bad day is merely an annoyance in an otherwise chain of things that I enjoy doing. Or I might get a snarky email from a client, or I might, you know, have to adjust a deadline. But at the end of the day, that is really not that big of a deal.
Yeah, perspective is an amazing thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't even have to wear pants to work if I don't want to.
Oh, you and Antoine can talk, can share notes then.
What?
Antoine has a shorts fetish. If it's not minus 40 out, Antoine's wearing shorts. That's his rule.
Oh, fair enough.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break?
Okay.
And then we'll come back and wrap up the show.
Fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right, guys. So I just want to start off by saying thank you to Brian for being on the show. It was super cool having you here, and it's really appreciated.
You're very welcome.
You have so much insight into the industry, and so many cool stories as you've traveled around from, you know, from one place to another, and as your own freelance studio. it's just very, very interesting to hear everything you've done and been through.
Well, I hope that I hope that I didn't completely bore everyone listening with my long, long rambling, and I didn't give you enough time to ask any questions or anything. So,
well, it's, you know, I thought you'd have to stop to breathe at some point, but I was wrong.
No, I have gills. I can speak and breathe at the same time. It's absolutely, it's a weird process.
No, but honestly, like,
you answered most of the question as you were going along. So I had some noted, and oh no, he answered that.
Exactly.
He answered that.
So. I'm making notes as you're talking, right? I'm like, okay, ask him this. Oh, no, he just said that. Okay. No, he just did that. Well, I was crossing stuff off as I'm writing it down.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying, if you guys ever want to chat some more, let me know. I'm always in the studio doing stuff, and I love to talk, as you can tell.
Guys, just want to let you know, GirlyBabe153 just sent me a Skype friend request.
Oh, that's obviously a quality contact.
Exactly.
Yeah, accept and download everything she sends you.
Exactly.
You probably have won some kind of lottery.
Exactly. It's sad that even Skype isn't safe anymore. There's nowhere to hide.
Well, I love opening up my Skype, and they'll be like, "You've got four new contact requests." And I'll be like, "Oh, okay." You know, thinking maybe something's business related, and it's all just spammy, awful. I don't know what I did to be on someone's list, but it happens pretty much every time I open my computer now.
It's inescapable.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was our last segue for the night. And just before we completely sign off here, I just want to give a little bit of a shout out to our friend Jill Walker from Foxtail Studios. She was kind enough to point Brian in our general direction, so I really appreciate that. And she's been doing a lot of good work. She's been posting all over the internet. She's teaching some classes at LVO, so good for her. And hopefully we can get her on the show sometime soon too.
Yeah, Jill, come do this show. I did it.
Well, that was creepy as all hell. And on that note, let's sign off before this goes someplace dark and evil. That's it for me. Take care, guys.
Bye, geeks. Bye.
Thanks for having me on.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio, and Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com, where you will find Broken Prism Reviews, a YouTube channel bringing you game reviews in three parts, unboxing, express gameplay, and a quick rundown of what makes the game stand out. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.